Hello, and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and you probably want to be better at sharing your Catholic faith. That's probably why you're listening. You want to be better at defending the Catholic faith. And there's lots of materials, and that's why we do this every time. But if you really want to be a better evangelist, a better apologist, you're going to have to be a better person. And that's what we hear all the time. It's about the person. And so this time we talk about dealing with anger when doing apologetics. Here to help us do that is Dr. Ray Guarendi, who is a Catholic, a father of 10 adopted children, and therefore has had lots of opportunities to work on his own anger, I am sure. Dr. Ray, thanks for being here with us.
Can't tell you how pleased I am, Cy, to be in this studio. With the 10 kids, the studio is quieter. And it smells better. So this is very nice.
I'm glad you're here. People, those of you who don't know Dr. Ray Guarendi, what the heck is wrong with you, first of all? He's a clinical psychologist, an author, a speaker. You likely know him from The Doctor Is In, heard daily on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, or from his TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, also on the EWTN network, but this time EWTN TV. Let me just say, Dr. Ray, if I may, before we get into the specifics of what happens with apologists, because a lot of apologists try to do their stuff online, which may particularly exacerbate the anger. And also there's a certain exposure you get in this field to mockery, derision, that kind of thing. But before I get into the specifics of that, I want to ask you about anger in general. The impression that I have is people are angrier now than they were when I was a kid. Is that correct or
wrong?
Is
that back right around World War I?
Well, it was after the Civil War.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
Weren't as many people then, Cy.
That's true. I mean, more people, more opportunity for anger. Do you have a sense that we're – I mean, it seems to be like a cultural trait we have now. We're mad.
Anger can best be defined as it is not going the way I want it to go. Whether that's another person behaving in a way you don't want them to behave, the
right.
world not spinning in the way you don't want it to spin.
Right.
That's what anger is. Anger is, I don't like the way this is. Whatever it is, it covers anything.
Yeah.
You know that half of the calls I get, half of the requests I get from people are, can you tell me how to make another person be different?
Yeah, right. Yes. That I've called several times about
you
my
have.
Wife.
Yes. She, you.
Oh, we're both calling different days probably. Okay. So I suppose in a media saturated world, also a world that's kind of fast paced and like you said, it's crowded. I mean, where many people live, there's lots of opportunities for the, I'm not getting my way here. This is not going
that's really
the way
what
I want it to go.
I'm not getting my way. You're not acting like I want you to act.
Right.
You're not thinking like I want you to think. You're not behaving like I want you to behave. Exactly. A great definition of frustration. Frustration is the difference between, the gap between the way we would like it to be and the way it is.
Okay. But here's the thing with the evangelist or the apologist or the person trying to share the good news is that there is a way in which it actually is the way they say it is, that they're not trying to share an opinion. They're trying to share a reality, and there's a massive resistance to it.
The frustration is, I want you to believe this.
Yeah.
There's the frustration.
Right.
I want you to think like I think, because I believe the way I think is truth.
Yeah.
And you're denying it. But there's another thing I believe that enters in here, Cy, and I'm going to summarize it in four words when you attempt to present the faith to someone.
Okay.
Four words. Don't take it personally.
Oh, yeah.
You're rejecting my arguments. You're implying I'm stupid. You're implying I'm naive. You're implying, how can you think that? Yeah, we take it personally.
Right.
I'm presenting a case and you're rebuffing it. No, you're rebuffing me.
Yeah.
That can ratchet up the anger from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds.
Do you know something? I'm 58 years old, and I recently learned that when someone's speeding on the freeway, weaving in and out, and passing me in some crazy way, they're not doing it to bother me. It has nothing
they
to do
with... They don't even know you're there, buddy.
It took me 58 years to figure
you
out...
You are a slow learner.
Yeah. But so I see what you're saying, because I have finally achieved a kind of, man, I hope they make it safely. You know, like, I don't personally feel offended that this person is a maniac.
I had a couple of calls recently on the radio. The one was the guy was upset because his siblings would say very nasty, sacrilegious things about the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And he was considering separating from them mm-hmm. because of this. And I got down to it. I said, that bothers you, doesn't it? They're attacking you because this is what you believe. And he goes, yeah, that's right. I said, how can you take that personal? They're going after the Catholic Church. They're saying nasty things about God. That has nothing to do with you.
Right.
But he was taking it personal. Had another lady call that said her daughter, age 20, in college, was getting into some kind of flaky belief system. And mom said, well, I read part of it and I wanted to throw up. And I said, Mom, this has nothing to do with you. I said, I want you to read all of it and take notes. And then you can ask your daughter about why this is appealing to her. And mom was thinking, I don't want any part of that. What? This has nothing to do with you.
Yep. Yes, exactly. So, okay. So the cutting off thing, puts me in a mind of something, because I want you to tell me if I'm right or wrong about this. I'm not always good.
By the way,
yeah.
Who appointed me to tell you if you're right or wrong? I just wanted to ask that.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. I think Michael Warsaw did, but okay. So, but I want to get your view. So I do not manage my anger well when I'm watching television news. I realize I'm an angrier person when I'm watching television news. So I quit it. And I think, well, did I take the easy way out? Or, you know.
There is a middle ground.
Yeah, which is?
You can think about what you're telling yourself when you watch this news.
Okay, help me with that. Yeah.
If you look at this and say, the world's going to hell in a handbasket and I can't do anything about it.
Right.
All these lost people. This is terrible. How do these people think like this? Unbelievable. All these souls are going to be lost. If you're going to watch it like that, turn it off.
Yeah.
Turn it off. If you look at it and your mindset is, I want to know how these people think. See, I'm a shrink, Si.
Yeah.
And if somebody walks into my office and tells me the most rot gut thing in the world you could actually think of, I have to sit there and try to understand it. I have to ask them questions about details.
Oh.
I have to act like I'm an interested party. Because if I don't know how they think the way they think, why they think the way they think, I can't do anything about that.
Right.
And I think when you watch the news, you keep reminding yourself, first of all, most of this I can't do anything about.
Yes.
Right. I am only watching this to be informed so that when somebody else approaches me about this or that aspect of our culture, you at least are aware of how they're coming at this.
Yeah,
so you can answer.
Right.
I watch the news or I listen to the news or I scroll up the news because I get calls on the radio about these things.
Yeah.
So I have to be able to answer them somewhat. If I were only to watch the news to get myself upset, I better turn it off.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So it does seem like part of what you're saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that
now you've asked me to correct you.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. You are a shrink. okay. So it seems like what you're saying is there's a way to have an emotional distance that I can put a kind of stop between what someone else is saying or doing and my reaction to it. There's somewhere to have that stop in there. I want you to tell me about that. How do I build that in? What is that stop?
Most people pay little attention to how they interpret events. They don't. They feel the emotional reaction.
Right.
And they believe that event, in your case, watching the news, creates this emotional reaction. But there's an intermediate step there. You have to interpret that event. That event doesn't automatically, like a reflex, create that anger or upset or frustration in you.
Right.
You're interpreting that event. I'll give you an example.
Let's say that my mother says to me, "Well, Ray, I really don't think that that you were right in not telling your children about Santa Claus, and that you decided to leave Santa Claus out of the Christmas equation." Now, how do I interpret that? Quit criticizing my parenting.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything wrong. See what happens?
Yeah.
If I take that personal, if I look at what she's saying and I twist it toward me, I'm going to get upset. But if I say, I can understand mom thinking that way because, you know, she grew up and she taught us about Santa Claus, and now she's thinking that I'm criticizing her parenting, because that's the first thing she would say. Oh, so we were wrong in telling you about Santa Claus? See what she did? She immediately personalized it.
Right.
Instead of saying, "Ray chose not to do that. We chose to do that." Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That seems like something that for many people would require practice, because I see the space that's there, the interpretation, but in the moment, that space seems very, very small.
It's automatic.
It's automatic. Okay.
And you have to slow down your thinking. You have to actually say, "Why am I getting so upset about this? How am I reading this? What am I thinking?" Always got to get in touch with, okay, let me interrupt my own sentence. People think that anger is an emotion.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
It's only part an emotion. Anger probably is majority a thought.
That's that interpretive thought where I've put my interpretations. Yes. That crazy person driving like that doesn't
care about me. He doesn't care about the people. He doesn't care about the people here.
Yeah.
Now let's stretch this out to an unlikely interpretation.
Okay.
Of all the interpretations, you might say, he just found out that his son was in an accident and he's got to get there. Or he's got a passenger in the car. They got to get to the emergency room.
Right.
Now, most people would say, "Come on, what are the odds of that? You know, I saw the guy. He was a 23-year-old kid. That's what 23-year-old kids do. And look at the car there. That's a 2020 Mustang. No wonder."
Right.
Perhaps. But there are always interpretations you don't know.
Right.
And if you at least acknowledge, okay, I don't know why that guy's driving like that.
Yeah.
I do know it's reckless, and I do know it could hurt people, but I don't know why he's doing it. Furthermore, I can't do anything about he's doing it, and I can't be miserable over the fact that he is risking other people. If I were to do that, then I'd be totally a victim of his behavior. He acts bad, I get bad. Automatic.
Yep.
A equals B.
Yep. So you start to build that habit of, why am I having this emotion?
Absolutely.
And then you can maybe get quicker at it as time goes on.
Most
you think?
People, yes, it's a practice. And most therapists will do it that way too, Si. Parents will come in, people will come in, and they'll say, "I do not get along with my mother-in-law. I don't." "Why is that?" "Well, she's critical. My mother-in-law is extremely critical." "So how do you react when she's critical?" "Well, how dare she? How could you say that to me? You know, I don't deserve that. Besides, I'm a better parent than she ever was anyway." Like, look at all the stuff you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
What if you told yourself, "Well, I happen to marry a guy who has a critical mother. That's who she is."
right.
And
the power drains out of it.
She's been critical of me for the last 9 years.
Right.
What do I expect? Do I expect her to be any less critical? No, but it bothers me more. The more she does it, the more it bothers me. Actually, if you were thinking more clearly, it should bother you less, because she's losing credibility. She's been critical repetitively. So you know that's her personality.
Right.
Is she critical with other people? Oh, yes. She's critical with everybody. Well, then why are you taking it personal?
Right.
Because that's who she is. But see, we don't think like this. We think like, I don't deserve that. What does she think this is here? I don't treat her that way.
Right.
And we just get ourselves all in a lather instead of interpreting it like, you know, I got to get along with a woman because she is my husband's mother.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to work real hard at not letting the crap she says get to me.
I have to say that the immediate criticism that I would assume might come back to that, I'm sure you've heard this many times, so you just want me to let people walk all over
there, me? That's exactly what they say. And I want to say, wait a minute. So if she's going to be critical, no matter what you do,
yeah,
have you told her? Oh, I've told her. That just makes her madder. Right. So that option's off the table.
Okay.
So she's going to be critical. Now you got two options. One, you can keep distressing yourself over it. And you can confront her every 8th or 9th critical remark. You can go, you know, I don't appreciate you treating me like that. I don't like you talking like that. And I always say to people, how often does that clear the air? How often does she go, you know, I hadn't thought about that.
Right.
You're That's making a good point.
Yeah.
I said, so you either continue to agitate yourself or you say, I'm not going to let it bother me. That doesn't make you a doormat if something doesn't bother you.
Right.
You're not turning around and saying, okay, well, if she criticizes me, I'll just change my behavior so that it matches what she wants. Now, that would be a doormat.
Got it.
Not being bothered is not a doormat.
Right.
As a matter of fact, not being bothered is strength.
Okay.
You can't do this to me. I don't give you the power to do this to me.
Yeah. That's just not right. You don't have that power. Okay. So what if she does things
By the
way,
I'm charging you for this.
I know. I'm getting a good You can charge me whatever you like.
Your wife called me and said, work on him.
Darren will run the credit card from the studio. Okay. So what about the person, though, who does things that they really can't do? Do you see what I'm saying? Like maybe she says things to one of the grandkids that she can't do that. And I can't just adjust my attitude.
No, when you realize you got to step in, you got basically two things are going to happen. One, she's going to stop because you either asked her to or demanded she do.
Okay.
Two, she's not going to stop.
Yeah.
And that at that point, you're going to have to make some decisions.
Okay.
Can I leave the kids unsupervised with grandma?
Right.
And by the way, just as an aside here, Si, I have had that happen often. The parents will say, my mother does not respect that I don't want them to watch certain kinds of television, but she doesn't respect it. She thinks I'm too strict. She thinks they need to be normal kids, and she wants them to watch sleaze to be normal kids. And I say, well, nah, she's put you in a corner.
Yeah.
And that corner is you really can't leave them over there unsupervised without you. That's sad, but she forced you into that.
Right.
Or the...
And that's not an emotional reaction.
No,
that's a choice you have to make.
It's the thing you got to do.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, many people get upset. She doesn't have any right to do that.
Yeah.
Why can't she respect what I want? It's a simple request.
Yeah.
Why can't she do that? You know, she is not respecting me. And that's all the thoughts just go flying through our heads.
Right.
And those thoughts just create an agitation. And you know what else they do? They create something that our Lord doesn't want us to have, which is resentment toward you. You know, I've tried to get you to stop and you won't.
Right.
So what's this 7x70 forgiveness stuff? Okay, you know, you're really not stopping. You're not showing any signs of contrition. So I'm about fed up with you.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people have shredded relationships in a family, shunned them, written them off. Because of stuff like this.
Yeah.
Very common. And it all, in many respects, settles down to, I just let that person get to me.
Okay. Yeah. Right. That 7x70 thing, I do sympathize with the person who's like, yeah, but Jesus never had to deal with a jerk like this.
Yeah, he never had my mother-in-law. His mother was perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So let's apply it a little bit to the apologist and the situation the apologist gets in. One is, let's say, for example, the person who wants to defend the Catholic faith is often just defending basic morals these days.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, one issue, and I'm going to pick something that I feel agitated about.
But you are at, you just, I'm surprised. Don't punch me here.
I know. I'm all,
Well, you are about one of the sweetest guys I know, and you're talking like this. You're
okay. Yeah.
You
well, that's
are
nice
a
of you
good
to say.
Spirit.
Yeah, but okay. Thank you. Nah, thank you. How much are you charging me for that? Okay, but let's say that you're in the conversation with the person about something that's quite harmful, like changing the hormones of a child at 6th grade or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, you're being dismissed and derided as an anti whatever. You're a phobe of some sort, or transphobic, or
see, there it is, personal again. You see what I mean?
Okay,
it's being personal.
All right, okay. So, I mean, I can say I can't control this situation. I can't, but at some point, there is this urge to correct it because children are being hurt.
Because you're going to hurt people.
Yeah, you're going to hurt people, right? And you're hurting people.
At one level, they're not directly hurting people. They're just part and parcel of a mindset that kind of flows through our culture.
Okay.
At another level, and this is what I have to do as a psychologist, and this is, who am I to tell apologists what to do? But I think sometimes a stronger apologetic approach is, I'm going to take what you're telling me, and I'm going to flow with it. So rather than me telling you all the pitfalls of getting a kid at age 11 to change their body structure, I'm going to ask you things like, well, do you think an 11-year-old really knows what they want? Yes, they do. Who am I to tell them they don't know what they want? Okay. So if they make that decision and someday they decide at age 24 that they regret it, is that a problem? In other words, I'm going to take you through my arguments in a Socratic kind of way.
Right.
I'm going to get you to defend your position. Because here's the thing, both in religious apologetics and in living life, many people have not thought through why they do what they do. They don't.
Yeah.
They operate out of cliches.
Okay.
Well, you know, a Catholic church, I'll tell you what, the Catholic church is, as long, you know, my son's homosexually attracted, and as long as the Catholic church believes that, then I just think the Catholic church doesn't have any place for homosexuals. Okay, so that's a cliche.
Yeah.
It's a total cliche. I want to know how they got to that point. Uh-huh. Well, how do you think that? Has your son been rejected? So do you know the Catholic church's teaching on homosexual individuals? So I'm going to find out, you defend yourself to me.
Yes, right.
Rather than me telling you, well, here's my argument, and this is why yours falls apart in the face of my argument. Because now it becomes a peeing match between two people that are going to stand their ground.
If I just let myself go up in anger and go, that's nonsense. That's not what the Catholic Church is at all. You don't know what you're talking about. I've lost an opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Here's the other thing. I had a friend once who was anti-Catholic. He's now Catholic. And one time we were talking, and I was asking him these kinds of questions, trying to get to the root of his upset, anger toward the Catholic Church. And as I asked him these questions, and he had to defend his stance, he was getting more stubborn. He was getting more irritated. People do that, Cy, when you ask them to make the case for why they think the way they do, many of them have not thought it through.
Okay.
So when you're making them out loud say it, they get mad. So he left in anger. I found out later he said to his wife, "Did I sound as stupid as I think I sounded?" Yeah.
He heard it.
He heard it.
Yeah.
He heard it.
Right.
I wasn't intent on convincing him of the Catholic Church's truth so much as I wanted to hear why you think the Catholic Church is that. Tell me. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to say, no, you're wrong. You're wrong about that. That's not what the Catholic Church teaches. No, I probably say something like, so how did you get the impression that that's what the Catholic Church teaches?
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to keep asking. I'm going to keep nudging. You explain yourself to me. And then at some point I might say, well, if I were to tell you that's not what the Catholic Church teaches, would you believe me?
Oh, yeah. And it's not, you're not, that's interesting what you did there, because you didn't pose the dilemma of making them accept what you said. Mm-mm. You're just saying, would you believe me?
Yeah, it's kind of like the old when you're in seventh grade.
Yeah.
Here's a note. If I were to ask you to be my friend, would you be my friend? Check one, check no.
Yeah. Did anybody ever say yes? I always got
I
no.
Never got, I never got no. I no. saved all the, I saved the, I saved the all get out of here jerk face ones.
Okay. All right. So this is very, very helpful. Are there, it does seem like there's a certain level in which this is technique, that this is commit yourself to learn.
You got to learn it. You got to learn. I know it because I'm a shrink, and that's how I have to deal with people in the office. So it's a lifelong practice. But it's not hard to do. Anybody can ask questions.
Yeah.
That's not tough. And you may not be able to think of the right question at the moment, but you can always say, well, tell me how you got to that point.
Right.
You don't have to ask some particularly probing point where the guy's going to go, oh, he's got me there. I never thought about that.
Right.
And most, by the way, the other thing you have to remember as an apologist, C.S. Lewis said this, a great line, I'll paraphrase him. He said, no doctrine seems dimmer to me than when I have just successfully defended it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, C.S. Lewis quote. And I think what you have to understand is that as I tell you as an apologist, don't take it personal. The person you're talking to is taking it personal. You're telling me I'm wrong.
Yep.
You're telling me I've lived my life in a wrong direction for 47 years. You're telling me the people I love in my life misled me. Uh-huh. You're telling me that I have to buy into something that I have so much problem with, and you're telling me I'm wrong. Who do you think you are?
Right.
There's a lot of that in their reaction.
Yeah, so it's fair then as the apologist to just accept that as I hit a nerve. I mean, that it's not that I don't need to fight at this point. Now it's in their – the ball's in their court.
Exactly.
Okay, okay. Now, I am concerned about this. The many internet Catholics, Twitter Catholics, who will say, you know what? You and Dr. Ray have forgotten the manliness of righteous anger. That why are you taking all this soft approach? God, you know, expressed anger. Jesus drove the people out of the money changers out of the temple. There is a place for righteous anger.
Of course there is. But here's the difference. There is a difference between righteous and right-filled anger.
Okay.
Righteous anger, if you want to make it simple, is you're hurting somebody else, and I'm really trying to protect or defend.
Okay.
Right-filled anger is you're directing it at me. So it isn't weak. It isn't soft to say, I want to know how you think. Because in fact, that's probably the better way to get to someone.
Yeah.
As opposed to, okay, you're wrong, and I'm going to tell you how you're wrong, because there is a God, and I know the truth, and I'm better than you, because I have it. Okay, how many people are you going to get to listen to you longer than a minute and a half if they smell that's your attitude?
Yeah, right. No, unless they just want the fun of fighting with somebody who—
There's a lot of that. Yeah. And you have to watch. You're not clashing swords, because a lot of people are going to say, oh, yeah, you think you're smart, so I think that Catholic answer stuff.
Right, yeah.
Well, listen to this one.
Yeah, right. We get that.
Like, I was lifting weights. This is about a month or so ago, and I overheard a guy absolutely just trashing the Catholic Church. And the reason he was trashing her was nonsense. It made no sense. And I said, sir, that's not what the church teaches. Just like that. And he said, well, then would you tell me? No, he didn't. He practically threw a weight at me. Okay, he didn't want to hear any of that. He said, who are you to tell me? I know what the Catholic Church teaches. And I just said, okay, I'm backing off of this, baby.
And you just let it go?
I just let it go. Yeah. He was so virulent and so angry and so nasty, and it was personal for him.
Right.
Catholic Church did this to me and my mother. That was it. It was over. No amount of... He was so locked into his own self-interest that he wasn't going to budge.
Well, I thank you. I'm very grateful for you coming and spending the time to talk this through, because especially I do think, and maybe I'm exaggerating the way the world has changed, but it just seems to me that with the anonymity of some of the Twitter back and forths and the various online, we used to have chat rooms. I don't think they have that anymore, but... You know, the person can very easily say to me, well, fine, you want to defend child molesters, go ahead, you know, and then I have a choice to make. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty good at making the wrong choice in that. But that anonymity allows for a certain...
It's not really the best way to do apologetics.
Okay.
You got to be person to person. There's a certain... that warmth and acceptance can be brought about that you can't bring about in an anonymous bunch of letters?
Yeah.
It's hard. You can't. You know, if I'm sitting next to you and I see you getting angry, then I'll know just to kind of settle, Ray, settle, tone it down. I can't see that when you're typing back to me.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Right. So some there are just wrong venues for evangelizing.
They're not the best.
Right. Right.
On a back and forth. Now, there's plenty of ways to do it when you're teaching through the internet. It's great. That it allows us to reach unbelievable amounts of people. But your comment about, does the world seem to be deteriorating faster? I always tell myself, we tend to think that the world is us. So
yeah.
In the U.S., or maybe the Western world, we think, well, that's the shape of the world. It's going to hell in a handbasket. Well, there's a whole lot of other people living in a whole lot of other places, you know. In Africa, the faith is growing.
Yeah.
So
you're saying they matter as much as America?
Yeah,
is
no,
that your
that's
implication?
Not true. Yeah. So there's that. And then the other thing is that it used to take multiple generations to change a culture because word of mouth through family members. That's
right.
How it changed.
Yeah.
Your influence was six people. You can influence millions now.
Yeah.
And the Rome collapsed in 400 years. Yeah, but that's because they didn't have the media that we have to influence everybody. So we will, I think you're right. If there's going to be a moral decay, it's going to be on fast forward. Yeah, it's a free fall.
Yeah. But it also means that the corollary to that is there are tools for sharing
there
the truth as well.
That's right.
So.
But you can't get into the numbers game.
Yeah.
You get into the numbers game. Bishop Sheen was talking to a young priest, the story goes, and the young priest says, you know, I've been responsible for 27 conversions. What do you think about that? Bishop Sheen said, well, my first piece of advice is quit counting.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keeping score, that'll make you miserable in the end. Right.
And you're going to lose most of them.
Right. Right. How many did you fail at,
yeah,
Father?
Yeah.
How many? Yeah. Or how many did you drive away while you brought those four or those 27 in? Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you very much. I really
Always
enjoyed this
pleasure,
conversation.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We love it when you're here. If you'd like to send us any feedback, maybe a follow-up question, complaint, whatever it is, you can send it to focus@catholic.com. That's our email address, focus@catholic.com. If you'd like to support us financially, it does take a couple bucks to do this. You can do that at givecatholic.com. Please remember that there is a $1 million limit. You cannot give more than $1 million at a time at givecatholic.com. And wherever you're watching or listening, if you give us that 5 stars, maybe a few nice words, that'll help to grow the podcast. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.